This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, broadcasting from my home in Maryland. Right now, many of us are depending on and putting our hope in science. We're turning to medical experts and doctors for answers on what to do and how to stay safe during a global pandemic. But what happens when our leaders and many people disavow that science? We've seen many Americans ignore public health guidelines like social distancing, and President Trump says he's taking the drug hydroxychloroquine, even after the FDA cautioned against its use. Mary Olivio is an astrophysicist and author of the new book, Galileo and the Science Deniers. He worked on the Hubble Space Telescope for more than two decades, and he believes there are timely lessons and warnings we can take from the father of modern science himself, Galileo Galilei. Mario, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mario, why do you think it's important right now to talk about Galileo?
Well, in some sense, it's always important to talk about Galileo because he is the father of modern science.
Right.
But in particular, at times when there is rampant science denial, there are lessons to learn from him, and also to, you know, understand that history already has cases of science denial, and this is not new, and it never ends well.
So give us some examples, because you called your book Galileo and the Science Deniers. So who are these science deniers that made your title?
Yeah, well, in his particular case, of course, the science deniers, their motivation was literal interpretation of scripture. Basically, you know, Galileo suggested that it's not that everything revolves around the Earth. The Earth is not the center of the universe, but rather in the solar system, all the planets revolve around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And this was perceived by the Catholic Church and the people at the time as if this was contradicting literal interpretation. I emphasize literal interpretations of scripture. So they tried to deny what he was saying, and eventually they put him on trial and even convicted him. He was sentenced to house arrest for the rest of his life.
So he was, wow, so that was the consequence of speaking out about his findings, basically.
That's correct, yes. And, you know, we are now sitting at home for a few months, and we see how difficult it is. He was on house arrest for 8.5 years.
Okay. Now, Mario, you're making some connections from that, from Galileo's time, to how our national leadership is now responding to COVID-19. Tell us what those connections are.
Yeah, so the motivation today is, of course, different. Most of the time, it has nothing to do with religiosity. It has to do with political conservatism and also with the fact that we are in the middle of an election year. So, you know, you see science denial in things ranging from climate change, which is being denied, people who refuse to vaccinate their children, even on normal times. And then, you know, you see the initial response to the COVID-19 pandemic when, you know, we heard sentences such as, oh, we have 15 cases and soon it's going to be down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're doing a great job and things like that.
And I mean, talk about the danger of that, right? Especially the last example you gave, if we're giving sort of this one view of things that is not quite so true. This is very dangerous.
Right. You bet it's dangerous. There are two things to be said here. One is that it is never a good idea to bet against science. I mean, even under normal time. When you have situations where the future of life on Earth or human life is at stake, such as the pandemic or the issue of climate change, it is really unconscionable, you know, to bet against science. But there is something that's maybe even more dangerous. You know, philosopher Hannah Arendt, wrote once that the ideal subject of totalitarian rule is not the convinced Nazi or convinced communist, but people for whom the distinction between fact and fiction and the distinction between true and false no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the situation which we are facing today, where we almost see the death of facts.
We're talking with Mary Olivio, astrophysicist and author of Galileo and the Science Deniers. Mario, here's a tweet from Brian that I'd like you to address. Brian says, I understand that in America we have vast freedoms, We have the right to create our own armor of belief. However, defiance during a pandemic is foolish and selfish and possibly deadly. Is believing whatever you want to believe part of the price America pays? What's your response to that?
Well, in some sense, one could think it is, but doing the right thing and abiding by guidance that is given by science, it shows respect not only to science, but also to your fellow citizens. Yes, if you are told to keep a distance, so to do social distances or to wear a mask, you're not doing this just for yourself. You're doing this for everybody else.
Right.
So it is a part of not just being a good citizen, but being a human being. So, you know, in that sense, there are these people who say, oh, the government will not tell me what to do. Well, the government is not telling you what to do. You should understand these things on your own.
Yeah. You've made a connection with Dr. Anthony Fauci as well, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, and Galileo. Here's Fauci last week at a congressional hearing after being challenged by Senator Rand Paul.
I have never made myself out to be the end-all and only voice in this. I'm a scientist, a physician, and a public health official. I give advice according to the best scientific evidence.
Mario, do you think that the role of scientists can sometimes be misunderstood? Is that what's happening?
Unfortunately, yes, apparently. I mean, even though you would have expected Senator Paul to understand that, I believe that he's a physician himself. A pediatrician, I think, maybe, or something like that. In any case, look, scientists like Dr. Fauci always say that it's not that they are always right. They always recognize that science is provisional. You know, we have to do the things that we think right based on the facts that we have at any given moment. And if the facts show something different, you know, we change the recommendation. And that's exactly what he was saying. So people would say, well, look, the model that predicted so-and-so turned out to be wrong. Yes, you know, the model used the best input at the time. But science has this ability to self-correct. This is the greatness of science. As data become better, you know, you get a better model. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what Dr. Fauci was trying to explain.
Is denialism any worse now? And if it is, why?
Unfortunately, I believe that in recent years, it has become worse than it used to be. I mean, we always had a certain level of denialism. There are, you know, people who are creationists and they want to teach creationist ideas side by side with Darwinian evolution in science classes. We always had that. Mm-hmm. We had people who refused to vaccinate children, even though they are putting their health in danger even before this. But it does look as if the current administration has somewhat of an anti-science attitude, and maybe even not anti, but, you know, dismissal. And putting science, you know, as not the first correct thing. They're sidelining science, basically. Mm-hmm. It appears to be much more prevalent now than it used to be.
Absolutely. We'll talk more about that. Still to come, we'll continue our conversation about science denial and today's climate of conspiracy surrounding COVID-19. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom makes it easy for Americans to set up their estate plans without leaving their homes. Don't know the difference between a last will or living trust? What about an advance healthcare directive? LegalZoom can help. They're not a law firm, but you can get started quickly online and also get advice through their network of independent attorneys. Learn more about estate plans and how you can speak to an attorney for advice at LegalZoom.com.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
On Bullseye this week, Tina Fey. On creating Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, and being the best at everything.
There was a window of time when we would just go to awards things and pick up our prizes and party with the people from Mad Men.
That's this week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking to Mary Olivio, astrophysicist and author of Galileo and the Science Deniers. Now, misinformation about the coronavirus has been spreading rapidly online and on social media, from relatively small misunderstandings like what needs to be disinfected to wilder conspiracy theories targeting Bill Gates. Why is so much misinformation spreading online? And what's the right way to respond to falsehoods? Let's bring two more guests into this conversation. Angela Rasmussen is a virologist at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. Angela, thanks for being on 1A.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Also joining us is Ben Collins, reporter with NBC News. Ben, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Angela, I'll start with you. You are active on social media. How much misinformation are you seeing right now, especially around COVID-19?
Oh, boy. Floods of misinformation every day, especially when I post something that might be somewhat controversial or that shows evidence, actually, that contradicts one of these conspiracy theories that's going around. My replies and mentions on Twitter just get absolutely flooded with a group of trolls and bots, and also some, I think, legitimate accounts that are arguing with me and trying to really refute the facts that I've presented. It's very frustrating.
Wow. And so, Ben, you've also been watching this misinformation online for a while now. Tell us why we're seeing so much of it and why so many conspiracies that are being shared all on social right now.
Yeah, these are targeted campaigns that have been in the pipeline for years. They've been waiting for a moment exactly like this. Coordinated groups like anti-vaxxers, helmed by very specific known bad actors, have been waiting for an event exactly like this for years. And they have already created these ecosystems for themselves to push these specific talking points they've had to new people. And with more people at home, checking Facebook, checking YouTube over and over again, places anti-vaxxers and places like QAnon Facebook groups, that conspiracy theory that believes that, you know, Donald Trump is secretly saving the world from cannibals, literally, they have coalesced around the idea that this is a government plot. And since they've coalesced around that one idea, they've sort of let their disagreements go to the side. And they have pushed these targeted harassment campaigns against doctors, against public figures, but now against just random people who disagree with them. So that's what you're seeing right now.
Comment from Jen here sums it up. She says, I feel it's okay to have an open mind, but not so open, your brain falls out. Now, one aspect of misinformation that's making the rounds is disproven cures. President Trump himself has made remarks about unsubstantiated treatments, like his musing about disinfectants or his push for the drug hydroxychloroquine, which he admitted to taking yesterday.
A couple of weeks ago, I started taking it. Because I think it's good. I've heard a lot of good stories. And if it's not good, I'll tell you right, I'm not going to get hurt by it. It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it. Frontline workers take it. A lot of doctors take it. A lot of doctors take it. I take it.
Angela, I'm dying to know your reaction to this.
Well, my first reaction was actually to roll my eyes because it's not clear to me that Trump is actually taking it. But this is a great example, in my opinion, of something that got picked up by the media with very little evidence to support it. And it's worked its way up to clearly one of the most influential people in the country who has been saying this over and over again about this miracle drug, even though increasingly we're seeing almost zero evidence that it actually has any effect at all.
Hydroxychloroquine is used to treat malaria and lupus, and there have been some warning about side effects. Poison control centers have reported a spike as well in calls after Trump's remarks. You know, more widely, and Ben, weigh in here, what have been the effects of the president's remarks about possible treatments?
First of all, we've talked to doctors. If you go to NBCnews.com, we have this article, but we talked to a bunch of doctors who have said, look, we are struggling here because people are listening to the president over the CDC, over expert advice, over doctors, and they're not coming in here until it's way too late. You know, they're not taking this thing seriously. They're not wearing masks. They're not doing the very basic precautions that we should all be doing because tribalization has sort of trumped everything at this point. It's triumphed over basic science and, you know, common sense. So they have, you know, we talked to one doctor specifically whose ER had someone who ingested bleach after the president sort of, you know, had a spitballing session about in some way taking or injecting bleach. So we've had these conversations with these doctors over and over again in the last few weeks, and they have consistently said, look, this is a huge problem. We don't know how to handle it. And that's sort of the problem that we have generally in a large scale. Facebook and YouTube, they're really the people who can crack down on this stuff. They're the people who can stop it. They're the people who can step in and you know, take down these bad actors before it goes viral instead of well after the fact. And absolutely, they've really shirked responsibility here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Mario, you've written that the response to the pandemic in the U.S. is political. Can you explain this? I mean, this is only part of the problem.
Well, of course, it's only part of the problem. I mean, look, it is enough to compare. You know, I looked at numbers, you know, by May 14 in, let's say, U.S. compare it to South Korea, for example. The number of deaths per million citizens in the U.S. was 264. The number of deaths in South Korea per million citizens, and this is not a small country, they have 52 million people, was five. Five instead of 264. Mm. So you have these situations where, you know, you have the initial response. Yes, now, by now we have lots of tests and everything and so on, but the initial response was one of total dismissal.
We're talking with Mario Livio, astrophysicist and author of Galileo and the Science Deniers. Also with us is Angela Rasmussen, virologist at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, and Ben Collins, reporter for NBC News. Mario, can you also respond to this email from Mike? Mike says, most people take scientists for granted. R&D exists in all aspects of product design, which for the most part is manned by scientists. All we have to do is look around us to see how scientists make all of the stuff we buy and use daily and keeps us safe. Your response?
Well, he's absolutely right. I mean, there are people who don't realize that the only reason we live the life we live is, you know, largely because of science. I mean, you know, take something as simple as our cell phone, you know, and the GPS system inside it uses both Einstein's special relativity and general relativity, believe it or not, which somebody may think, what do I have with general relativity? Well, you do, because otherwise you would not be able to go to where you want to go. And the same is true for everything else. If you look at life expectancy, you know, at the time of Galileo, it was something like 40 years, and, you know, and now it's 80. So science has led us to the type of life we live and continues to guide us on all our everyday decisions.
Angela, I want to shift for a moment. You know, many conspiracies involve the idea that the virus was created in a lab. How do you respond to that?
So this is a very difficult one because this has continued to sort of rear its head since the very beginning of this pandemic. So it might be good for me to just briefly say why scientists don't think that it was created in a lab.
Yes.
We have genetic evidence to suggest that this virus evolved naturally. There is nothing in this virus's genetic sequence that indicates that it came from any of the known systems for making coronaviruses in a lab, which there are many that have been published. There is evidence that this naturally evolved, and we also know that there are a lot of bat SARS-like coronaviruses in China and elsewhere in the world that this virus most likely arose from. But because there are a lot of things that we don't know about how this emerged, likely naturally, there is room for people to speculate on that. And given the political climate, the increasing rhetoric that is sort of blaming China for the emergence of SARS coronavirus 2, I think that there's really a lot of space for people, especially bad actors, who want to promote some kind of, you know, nefarious plot that underlies this, rather than the more mundane and most likely true scenario in which a virus naturally emerged from a bat, potentially into some animal, into a human.
Mario, sum this up for us. What is the public health danger from so much misinformation being shared?
Well, you know, there is so much misinformation that the people get confused. And when the people get confused, that's about the worst situation. It really is, you know, signaling the death of facts. And when you don't have real facts that you can rely on, then this puts the entire population in danger. What the administration does is all the time it tries to throw the blame on somebody. It is China, it is the World Health Organization, now it's President Obama. Every other Monday or Tuesday, there is somebody else who's to blame, except the type of confusion and misinformation that comes from that. You know, they watered down even the CDC recommendations into a, you know, like an executive summary. You can always have an executive summary, but give all the details as well. This is very, very dangerous.
Maureen says on Twitter to us, she says, Dr. Fauci is the only one in the federal government I listen to. I'm lucky enough to live in Ohio, so I have my governor to guide me. Another comment here from Nathaniel, who tweeted, my mom doesn't like Tom Hanks anymore because she thinks the virus is fake and he lied about being infected. I just don't have the patience to argue with that kind of nonsense. Well, you have it there on Twitter. We've been talking to Mary Olivio, astrophysicist and author of Galileo and the Science Deniers. Thank you so much for your time today, Mario.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, coming up, what does the spread of misinformation around COVID-19 actually mean for the possibility of a vaccine? Yes, a vaccine. We'll talk more about your questions with virologist Angela Rasmussen and NBC News reporter Ben Collins in just a moment. Stay with us.
Face masks have become the new normal as we continue to grapple with the ongoing pandemic. But when did we start wearing masks for our health and safety?
This week on Throughline, the origins of the N95 mask and how it became the life-saving tool it is today.
Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time
to understand the present.
Now, we're talking about the spread of misinformation during the coronavirus pandemic and its potential impact. Joining us is Angela Rasmussen, a virologist at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, and Ben Collins, a reporter with NBC News. Ben, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this email that we got from Shelby Smith. She says, your demand for freedom from a mask is a demand to limit my freedom. I am 68 years old with heart failure. An encounter with an unmasked virus carrier threatens my health and very life. Ben?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, is that this has become a meme, like a jokey meme on the far right parts of the internet saying, you know, this is, covering your mask is somehow not, is covering your face with a mask is somehow not brave, that people are saying it's like World War II or going into battle without a face mask on. That's not the case, but really we're in a situation where doing the exact opposite of what experts say has an incredible amount of weight on the internet right now. And I don't just mean rhetorically, I mean mathematically, algorithmically. Saying the most sensational thing is the thing that's rewarded by algorithms on Facebook and YouTube, and it has been this way for years. They've made some inroads to try to curtail this, but it's at this point of a crisis and an emergency. They're just simply not doing enough to stop it. And again, it's literally weighted more. So you are more likely to see this sort of thing with the sensational headlines, the opposite opinion, than you are to see the opinion of an expert or actual facts.
I'm still stuck on the part where you were talking about covering your face with a mask is not brave. Wow. Social media companies have been struggling to keep up with all the misinformation that's being shared on their platforms. That's not just their job, though. It can be ours, too. Very important to note that these are adults, grown-ups, behind this misinformation that's being spread, not so much the fault of these tech companies. But Ben, are tech companies like Twitter and Facebook doing enough to stop the spread of misinformation? I think that's the question of the day. You know, and if not, what could they be doing better?
Yeah, by the way, you make a good point, right? The real bad guys here are the people selling supplements on top of this stuff, saying, you know, you can boost your immunity if you take this stuff and it'll kill coronavirus, or take this bleach, this thing called MMS, which is a fake, it's bleach basically, but they claim it cures coronavirus, and that's been pushed in all of these circles as well. So those are the real bad guys here, right? And, you know, I think everyone agrees that that's really dangerous and terrible stuff. But the platforms have known about them forever, and they've done very little to stop them. And that's really the issue here, is that, you know, they can take these piecemeal steps, or they can listen to researchers who have been sounding the alarm for, you know, 10 years. My colleague Brandi Zadrozny just profiled these three women researchers who have been on the tail of online harassment for 10 years and saying, these are the things that you need to stop this. Like, we actually know the answers now. We know a lot of the answers on how to stop this. And they've been ritually ignored by Facebook and YouTube for a decade. So, you know, our bad actors are going to exist everywhere. Crazy people have existed throughout the history of time. People abetting them with a megaphone that is the largest in human history, that's the brand new thing. That's the new thing that we have to find a way to figure out in the next few years.
And, you know, Facebook private groups, let's not forget, they are hard. They're more difficult to moderate, and they can perpetuate some of these conspiracies. Angela, can you weigh in on this email from Jamie? Jamie says, we're programmed through movies and media to always see bad events as orchestrated by some villain, and conspiracy theorists cannot let that idea go. Your thoughts?
I think that that just responds to a really human need for certainty and for an explanation that is understandable. And one thing about science is that it's really fraught with uncertainty. And we are trained to sort of manage that uncertainty. And as Mario was saying earlier in the show, you know, scientists can be wrong because it's actually part of our job to be wrong, to disprove our own hypotheses with facts and evidence. And so I think that the regular person doesn't necessarily have that same view or understanding of uncertainty. And it's a lot easier to sort of cast complicated problems in your mind, especially problems like coronavirus that we don't have a lot of answers for and we don't know that much about, as sort of, you know, a struggle between good and evil. And we've seen throughout this pandemic that these sort of false binaries are being set up because they're really better narratives. So is it, you know, is it's us versus China, for example, or President Trump versus President Obama, or public health versus the economy. And in reality, these situations are a lot more complex than that. And there's not necessarily a good guy or a bad guy. And viruses themselves are not, you know, they're not sentient. They don't have good or evil. They can cause disease or not, and this is a natural feature. But I think it's a lot harder for people to think about it that way, because it certainly it makes a lot more sense to just our most base human instincts to sort of think of something as a morality play with a villain and a hero.
What are the long-term effects, Angela, of how the public perceives viruses or vaccines?
I think that the long-term effects can be very, very detrimental, especially with regards to this pandemic. Our real way out of this, to truly return to normal life, is to develop a vaccine. If we have a sufficient number of people in this country who don't trust a vaccine or are unwilling to take a vaccine, that's going to really damage our ability to control this virus and potentially even eradicate it. It's also going to really, really harm our ability to respond effectively to the next pandemic virus. And in my opinion, you know, this pandemic was not a question of if, it was a question of when. Mm-hmm. And I think virtually all of my colleagues agree with that. There will be another pandemic virus. And my question is, are we going to learn the critical and painful lessons that we've learned from this one? At least me and my colleagues have learned from this one. Are we going to be able to apply that knowledge to the next pandemic so that fewer people die? And right now, I'm not very optimistic about that prospect.
Hey, Ben, what do you predict happening if we actually do get a vaccine for COVID-19?
Well, that's the issue. You know, anti-vaxxers have primed the pump here and expanded their reach so that when it does come along, they're afraid to take it. You know, they think it's like a challenge to take it to begin with. So that is going to be a large scale issue. And there's, you know, they don't really know in some of these communities how to deal with this, because in a lot of these cases, they are huge fans of Donald Trump, who has, you know, in the last couple of days said, you know, we're trying to supercharge this thing. We're trying to like go full force into finding a vaccine. and they don't really know how to handle the dissonance. And frankly, I've seen them mostly side with anti-vaxxers, even over Donald Trump, who they've largely sided with in the past. So they've created an environment for themselves where they have dogmas now. And one of those dogmas is vaccines are inherently bad. So I don't really know what's going to happen when it is available, but it's going to be a dangerous time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Angela, how would you respond to Mary, who shared this with us on Facebook? She says, there are a lot of conspiracy theories shared in English, and luckily also a large amount of science refuting it. But my mother-in-law has plenty of conspiracy theories that she's fallen for, all shared in Spanish. But I can't find anything to refute it in Spanish. I wish I had more resources to help me. What can she do?
I mean, that is a really
tough one.
And
yeah.
I myself have seen on Twitter anyways, a number of Spanish speaking virologists and epidemiologists actually getting into this issue. I've seen it in other languages as well, but it is a real problem depending on, you know, the language, the amount of users of that platform and the level of access, I guess, that people of a given language speaking group have to those platforms. There certainly can be issues with people not being able to get the right facts because they're not available in the language that they speak. In general, it's a terrible problem because, as Ben said earlier, you're giving these bad actors a really large megaphone, and they have these existing networks, these resources to communicate their message in many different languages. Mm-hmm. For the scientists who are trying to refute it, I mean, in this case, it's me and my colleagues, and all of us are sitting in our houses, you know, going on social media as time
right.
permits.
Yeah.
So it's a really uneven, I guess, playing field in terms of trying to combat that around the world.
Ben, Angela mentioned this earlier when she talked about the media taking President Trump's hydroxychloroquine story and running with it. But is it part of the media's responsibility to dispel conspiracy theories? What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And look, there have been competing thoughts on this for a while. And I think back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean like 18 months ago. Even, some people believe that it was like beneath the media's role to go and confront these things. But they have created spaces for themselves that are in a lot of ways larger than mainstream media. And that is definitively true. And that's something they take a lot of pride in, right? You know, QAnon yeah. people say, we are the news now. To a lot of people, they are, and people who have created their own filter bubbles where they don't even interact with regular news. People need defense from authoritative sources. They need to be able to say, you know, here's an actual way to contradict this. I mean, even if it's incredibly galaxy brain, crazy people stuff, you have to be able to bring some defense to them to try to bring them back, even if they are currently unmoored from reality.
Well, Ben, with 30 seconds to go, tell us, how do you address or debate someone? What's that defense? Someone who's denying science. What do you say?
Show them, yeah, sure. Show them the motives behind that person with that YouTube video. Say like, hey, isn't that weird that he's selling all those supplements at the end of that video? Isn't that weird that guy's running for Congress? Isn't there a much larger story that's not being told about these people in real time, behind the scenes, that, you know, maybe he has some sort of incentive to push this crazy narrative that you've just sort of been sucked into that has all the answers yeah. when the answers are kind of more complicated than you think?
We've been talking to Ben Collins, a reporter with NBC News, and Angela Rasmussen. She's a virologist at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. Thanks to you both for your time today. Now, before we go, we continue a tradition that we started weeks ago, collecting your stories about acts of kindness and then sharing them. Today's story comes from Penny in Oberlin, Ohio.
I was sitting in my car putting on my mask and gloves. The fellow across from me was getting out of his car. He seemed to look over at me, and next thing I knew, he got back in the car. What he was doing was putting his mask on. When he got out, I said, "Did I prompt you to put that mask on?" He said, "Yes, thank you so much." I felt that he really did something wonderful because we all know that the masks are protecting others. They're showing respect. And it felt good that he was kind enough to go back in and get his mask on.
Thanks so much for sharing your story, Penny. Now, if you have an act of kindness to share as well, we would love to hear from you. We read all of them. Our number is 855-236-1212. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.